The Life and Impact of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Perhaps you memorized a Longfellow poem in middle school or high school, Paul Revere's Ride or The Village Blacksmith. More than 200 years since his birth in Portland in 1807, Longfellow is still in textbooks and still ignites the imagination. In his day, Longfellow was an international celebrity, in today's jargon, an influencer, who was an abolitionist, professor, and associate of many of the great thinkers of his time. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, as part of our year-long celebration of Maine's bicentennial, we'll take a closer look at Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Have you visited the Wadsworth Longfellow House in Portland? Do you have a favorite Longfellow poem? Are you a distant relation? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Portland native Henry Wadsworth Longfellow became an international celebrity in his lifetime, which spanned from 1807 to 1882. Today on the show, we will talk about Longfellow's life in Maine and afterwards, and why he had such a lasting impact. This is part of Maine Calling's series of programs to mark Maine's bicentennial. Joining me in the studio, John Babin. He is Visitor Services Manager at Maine Historical Society and the Wadsworth Longfellow House. He is the author of the book, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow in Portland, the Fireside Poet of Maine. And on the line with us from Indiana, Christoph Imschor. He's Provost Professor of English at Indiana University in Bloomington and has written three books on Longfellow. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you read Longfellow's poems, visited his childhood home? Are you an aficionado of Longfellow? Always had a question about him? Then give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to give that number again because it's different than the pledge phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Facebook page. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today. And I think that there's a lot of pride in Longfellow being from Maine, a lot of people very familiar with his work. And I want to start with you, John, and ask if you can take us back to 1807 and or maybe the years of Longfellow's childhood. What was Portland like? What was the Portland that Henry Wadsworth Longfellow grew up in? Was it crackling with energy? How would you describe it?
Well, when people come to visit the Wadsworth Longfellow House in Portland, the first thing we do is I will take them out in front of the home and I will actually explain to them exactly what Portland was like. And if you think about it, when this home was actually built, Congress Street was an old dirt road. And the home was built looking out onto the harbor, which is just two blocks away. All that area filled in to bring in the railroads. So when Henry Wadsworth Longfellow was growing up, it was a small seaside community that he remembers growing up, thinking about Deering Woods. He talks about it in the poem My Lost Youth. Deering Woods, where Deering Oaks has started, on the side of the house where he grew up.
Okay. Mm, yeah. So completely different.
Oh, completely different, yes.
But he had the good fortune of, when he went off to Bowdoin College at the ripe old age of 15, of making a lifelong friend.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Who it was also a man of letters, Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Yes, yes. Well, the story about Hawthorne is a great one because they went to Bowdoin College together, but it wasn't until Twice Told Tales by Hawthorne was actually published that Hawthorne got a hold of Longfellow, wrote him and said, you know, we went to the same school together, but we weren't exactly chums, and asked him if he would do a review.
Oh.
Of Twice Told Tales, and Longfellow gave him this stellar review, and since that point, they became best friends.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to bring you into the conversation, John, and I know we're jumping around a little bit, but, you know, I think all of us know, all of us who live in Maine and follow Longfellow at all, that he was a really big deal in the 1800s. Characterize that. How big of a deal was he?
So, You're addressing me, well, because you called me John. I just want to make sure.
Oh, I'm so sorry. No, Christoph, I apologize.
Not barging in on anything. Hello, everyone. Really great to be on the show. Longfellow was perhaps at one point the most famous poet in the world, and internationally as well, well known to people abroad. That's how I came across Longfellow for the first time. I'm a native of Germany and discovered him really for that reason. He was somebody who had a gift for reaching audiences, and he was at the same time also somebody who was very canny, very good at managing his own reputation financially, in terms of making sure that his books stayed in print, that he retained control over them. So it's kind of difficult for us to imagine how popular he really was. He was so popular that that stories about his life circulated in the news, that people paid attention when he showed up at the opera. One of the stories that I really like, which I think I got from an exhibit at the main Longfellow House, there was a little kind of vignette of Longfellow and his daughters. It was actually sort of a little medallion or something like that that was found on the battlefield at Gettysburg, left behind by someone. Longfellow had no relatives, nobody who fought at Gettysburg who would have had a reason to carry it. So that, you know, makes or suggests that somebody just took it along with them because it was important to them.
Why, Christoph, why do you think it was? Why did Longfellow capture the imagination of the world in the 1800s with his poetry? Surely he wasn't the only fine poet writing.
Absolutely not. A number of reasons. First of all, his poetry is really the kind of poetry that reaches out to the reader, that does not lecture, does not assume anything that he knows the reader won't assume. So, in fact, many of his poems really directly address us and tell us something about life, about the life that we live. It's often sort of considered moralizing, and a later generation felt there was too much of it in his poetry. But in reality, it's almost an act of friendship that his poems extend to the reader, in the sense that they tell us to just keep on doing what we are doing, to embrace life. There's a sort of basic decency that his poetry models that was embraced by people. And it was something that also translates very well into other languages. Longfellow was one of the most translated poets and somebody who was able to actually stay in touch with people in other countries as well. And that's something that we have to remember. He had an international reputation. He himself, which is very unusual and something I always like to emphasize, he spoke perhaps, by conservative count, about 9 languages, some of them fluently, was able to read 8 more. And the fact that people could write to him in Danish, that people could write to him in French, and Longfellow was able to respond to it, is something that, in the 19th century context, is absolutely unique.
John, back to you. How does a boy from Portland, Maine, become somebody who speaks 9 languages and travels the world and becomes a celebrated poet and really cultural icon?
Well, the story is basically, it's just amazing to think that Henry Wadsworth Longfellow graduates from high school at the age of 14 years old and starts to attend Bowdoin College. And when he graduates at the age of 18, he's asked by the trustees of Bowdoin to become their professor of modern languages, going off to Europe to study Italian, German, Spanish, French, Portuguese, and knew how to speak Latin before he even left. And so his travels, you know, meeting people like Washington Irving, you know, who was somebody that was just inspired Longfellow, even to his days, you know, his worth ethic, you know, you just think about that. And his travel throughout Europe, I do write about that. He was definitely amazed. One of the great stories I love is that he found French one of the most difficult languages to learn and wrote to his father and said to his father, whoever told you that you could master the French language in 6 months is totally wrong. Let's try 6 years.
Let's try 6 years. I like that. I want to get back to his poetry just a little bit, because it's one thing I've learned in reading up and in preparing for today's program is that even though I think many children in the U.S. even know about, you know, Listen, My Children, and You Shall Hear of the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere or Hiawatha, that really the poem that set him to fame was Evangeline, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why, and I want to have both of you talk about this. I'll start with you, John. Tell me the story behind it.
Well, the story basically was a story that was given to him, okay? And it was a story it was a very tragic story about the Arcadians being, you know, forced out of their native country. And, of course, Evangeline loses her husband. And so it was a very, very sad story. This thing I do like about Evangeline was he finished it in Portland.
He finished it in Portland.
Yeah, yes, he did. Yeah.
So and I want to turn to you, Christoph, and tell me how Evangeline changed his reputation, what it was before and what it was after, and why you think that happened.
But first of all, one thing to emphasize about Evangeline, and this connects with something I said earlier, it is in many ways a truly international poem. It's just imagine the heroine of this American epic, which is what Longfellow wanted to write, is a native speaker of French, a Catholic native speaker of French, and, you know, making a woman the heroine of the poem. And then, in a way, using that poem to travel through all of America, because Evangeline ends up in Louisiana as she's looking for Gabriel, and then the Ozark Mountains finally ends up in Philadelphia. So this is truly an American poem. And the fact that it speaks for so many people, different regions, so many different experiences, that is something that in many ways made Longfellow a truly national poet. It also speaks, and this is sort of one aspect of Longfellow that's very important to remember, it doesn't just speak about the experiences of people in New England. It speaks in many ways also for disadvantaged people. When you imagine the displacement of the Acadians as sort of an involuntary act, think of what is happening. Think of the displacement of Native Americans in the 1830s. Think of the experiences of enslaved people. That is essentially, the poem provides a kind of lingua franca, a kind of language that speaks for all of these experiences in the 19th century of people who undergo trauma in so many ways. And that was reflected in the sales of the poem, which were absolutely unprecedented. Longfellow was very, as I said, was very good at negotiating higher royalties than anybody had ever commanded in the American literary marketplace. And that's certainly something that with Evangeline he took to a new level. He was so popular that there's one story that I always like to tell. When he went to town to purchase something, the clerk in the store said to him, "You'll get some of that money back in the afternoon, Mr. Longfellow, when I buy myself a copy of one of your Evangeline books." So essentially sort of an exchange of goods that was happening. And he liked that. So he's offering something that you can identify with. And, of course, he's also getting paid for it.
You know, it's interesting to me, John, we're talking about Longfellow during this bicentennial year. And when he was born, Maine was part of Massachusetts. So Longfellow was born in Portland, Maine, as a citizen of Massachusetts. But by the time he's graduated college, Maine is its own state. And I'm wondering, do we know how Longfellow felt about that?
I really don't have any evidence of what he thought about statehood, other than I know that his father basically was not for it to begin with, even though he signed the Constitution. Okay, there is a broadside that Stephen Longfellow signed, basically talking about not seceding from Massachusetts, but then would go on in 1819 and actually sign it. It's a kind of a good story about the bicentennial, because when you think about Stephen Longfellow, his father was for seceding from Massachusetts, along with his father-in-law, Peleg Wadsworth, and they started talking about secession in the late 1700s, okay?
You know, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, far prior to 1820.
Well, there's so much more to talk about Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. We could fill hours and hours. We are going to go to a break. When we come back, though, I want to talk with both of you about his personal life and some of the real tragedies in his life, and then also sort of some thinking about what Longfellow meant to our young country. You know, the United States of America was not even a generation old, if you will, when he was born. So if you would like to join the conversation about Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Local support comes from Dead River Company, committed to keeping Maine homes and businesses warm and proud to be a part of celebrating Maine's bicentennial. DeadRiver.com by Modern Pest Services, now featuring the anti-seamic smart pest control system for your home. Learn more at modernpest.com. And by University of Maine at Augusta, committed to providing a quality, affordable education online and in the classroom. UMA.edu.
You are listening to listener-supported Maine Public Radio. We're taking just a moment from Maine Calling just to stop and do the business of public radio. Now is a great time to call with your pledge of support, 1-800-866-1475. It is the final day of our February Grow Together membership campaign.
Let's grow together, winter campaign time. 1-800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. If you haven't yet, won't you make a call of support to Maine Calling, to Maine Public Radio, to public media in general? 1-800-866-1475. Think about the role it plays in your life and the life of your community.
That's right. You tune in every day or maybe several days a week to hear what Jennifer and company are covering in Maine Calling. Today's such a great and fascinating program about Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. I love the idea, the context of Longfellow and his life in the context of the bicentennial of Maine, the fact that they were just talking about how when Longfellow was born, he was born in Portland, Massachusetts, and by the time he graduated from college, he had been born in Portland, Maine. So that is really fascinating, and also to think about his connection and the strides that he was making as a poet in the royalties he was getting with his literature for the amount of money he was making, which is all very fascinating stuff. And that is public radio giving you context, giving you information, helping you connect more deeply with the place where we live. And that is radio worth supporting at 1-800-866-1475.
1-800-866-1475, mainepublicradio.org. One of the terms often used to talk about public media, be it radio or television, I guess online too, is lifelong learning.
That's right.
Lifelong learning. You come away from watching a television program an hour smarter, not an hour older. Same thing goes with listening to whatever might be at hand here on Maine Public Radio. Well, wait, don't tell me. Yeah, you learn on that too.
You sure do.
Sure do. Throughout the schedule, programs quality, programs of value, programs, of course, news related that you can trust. 1-800-866-1475, and all yours for pennies a day or dollars a day, whatever you feel this service is worth. The important thing, though, is you be part of that listener-supported public radio you're listening to.
That's right. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. Sure, it's Friday. It is the final day of our Grow Together membership campaign. But you know what? Are you someone who tunes in every Saturday for Wait, Don't Tell Me? Are you a fan of How I Built This with Guy Raz or Weekend Edition with Scott Simon? When you call today, Friday, you are supporting all of those Saturday programs.
That's right.
Yes, call now, 1-800-866-1475. Go online at mainepublic.org.
And a great program we have coming up tomorrow is the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Yes.
And I was thinking of the New York Times, not necessarily totally related, but
good connection.
That,
yeah,
connection
yeah.
there.
Same
and
city.
If you pledge your support at the $15 a month level, about 50 cents a day, we'll send you a year-long digital subscription to the New York Times.
That's such a great deal. I don't know how often you hit the paywall for the New York Times, but I do sometimes and I get frustrated. And you know what? For $15 a month, not only would I be supporting Maine Public Radio at a wonderful level that I would feel proud of, but in addition to that, to get to enjoy the New York Times for a full year, great.
And I am a subscriber to the New York Times, and it does cost that much by itself.
I know.
And it's a wonderful resource, speaking of lifelong learning.
That's right.
And staying on top of current events, yes.
And you can take advantage of that by calling 1-800-866-1475. We're going to go back into the program very soon,
but we will be here.
You can give us a call. We want to make sure everyone has a chance to support their public radio here in Maine. 1-800-866-1475.
The great state of Maine.
The great state
Happy
of Maine.
Happy birthday, Maine. 1-800-866-1475. MainePublic.org, as Susan said, will be here. If you haven't yet supported public radio, now would be a great time to do that at 1-800-866-1475 or MainePublic.org. There's room for you in the community that keeps public radio loud and clear and very strong here in the great state of Maine.
That's right. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call or go online at MainePublic.org. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are learning about the life and work of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. My guest today, Christoph Irmscher, professor of English at Indiana University in Bloomington and a Longfellow expert, and John Babin, visitor services manager with the Maine Historical Society and author of a book about Longfellow. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. I'll say that again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Facebook page. Before the break, I alluded to this just a little bit, and I'll turn to you, Christoph. Longfellow had a great amount of tragedy in his life, did he not? Tell me about his wives.
So he lost his first wife, Mary Stora Potter Longfellow, while they were actually traveling in Europe, to a miscarriage. And then he tragically lost his second wife, Fanny Longfellow, a brilliant woman. There's very, very touching passages in his journals about her. He lost her to a freak accident in 1861, was on the 10th of July, 1861, when a dress caught fire, and she was sealing locks of her children in little envelopes. And he rushed over to extinguish the fire. He was taking a nap, wrapped her in a rug, but it was too late, and she died the next day, which was a terrifying experience, of course, for everybody, not just for the Longfellow family. As we said earlier, he was a national celebrity, and people did pay attention. It was just shocking that someone who, in his poetry, always tried to convey a sort of sunny outlook of life, or at least something that would uplift you, that such terrible things would befall him. And it is actually said that Hawthorne was terrified of being too close after that to Longfellow, because he was afraid that some of that tragedy would rub off on him. And the tragedy was such that Longfellow was paralyzed after. He was himself significantly hurt. And one of the most touching things is when you look at his journals right after Fanny's death. He was a journal keeper, so he would write in his journal every day. For days after that, he could only put little crosses in his journal. He could not write. And the one poem that addresses Fanny's death, The Cross of Snow, was never published in his lifetime. He waited 18 years, essentially, to be able to write about it, and then he didn't publish it.
John, what do you want to add to how these just terrible, traumatic life events affected Longfellow?
Well, the very, very sad thing about it was the day before Fanny's death, he had written in his journal about just how wonderful his life actually was. And then the following day, she would die in the tragic fire. As Christoph said, you know, it took him 18 years before he could even write Across the Snow, you know, about Fanny's death. But the other tragedy, which a lot of people don't talk about, was Mary Stora Potter. And that was his first wife. She was from Portland, Maine. And when she died from complications of a miscarriage, Henry would write The Voices of the Night. And that collection of poetry actually is something that really uplifted his career and really started his career to soar, you know, making him a well-known literary person. So, you know, Fanny's death was of course tragic, but Mary's death inspired the poet a lot. You know, when you read those poems like, you know, The Psalm of Life and other ones, just absolutely, you know, amazing works, and they were very, very early, but it was, you know, also Mary's death that had a lot to do with his writing. Yeah,
we're going to go to another Mary who's calling from Kennebunk. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. When I was in high school, if you wanted to have or try for an officer in the class, you had to speak before the student body. And so I went home after hearing that and spoke with my dad. He was a real classicist, and he loved to do parodies. So we decided to do a parody on Paul Revere's Ride. And I'll just read you the first two verses because it's too long to take up your time. This is how we did it. Listen, and you shall hear a candidate in her junior year. Of course, we changed that wording depending on which office I was running for. And then it went on and on through the rest of the poem. But I always cherish that because of my little touch with Longfellow.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for calling. And, you know, I want to bring up something that Mary kind of alludes to. She's talking about Paul Revere's Ride, of course, and so many people know that. And so many people know, I think, by now that Paul Revere's Ride didn't exactly happen the way Longfellow wrote that it did. But it brings up the idea of how much did Longfellow sort of create the myth of early America and create what we think of? And I want to ask both of you about that. Christoph, what is Longfellow's role in sort of defining this young country?
It's a complicated role, and one that he did embrace. He felt when he was criticized about fudging things, about John Revere, the historical reality of John Revere, he would always insist that poets are not historians. Poets are essentially storytellers, and they provide stories that you can do something with. He did a similar thing with The Song of Hiawatha, which also combined different Native American myths and took an Iroquois story and transposed it to Minnesota, for example. He felt poets have the liberty to do that. And what he essentially provided in his own way was something that at the time other writers were calling for, when Emerson, and at the beginning of his Manifesto Nature, essentially said, you know, we need to see with our own eyes, we need to develop our own language, we should not be beholden to Europe. Longfellow, in his own quiet and very different way, was providing essentially stories that one could hold on to, that became in a way foundational myths. Revere is one of them. Evangeline provided another one of those stories. And certainly The Song of Hiawatha, which was just fabulously successful, also provided a kind of origin story about how this land came to be what it is today. And I just want to add, it's a little unrelated because of the caller's point about parodies. Longfellow was one of the most frequently parodied poets of his own time. So plenty of parodies, especially The Song of Hiawatha, came out. And to some extent, Longfellow was totally okay with it because it actually showed that what he was providing, what he was delivering, was something that people could take and do things with, transform it, even mock it to some extent, but that still meant it had become part of the cultural fabric.
Mm, that makes sense. It made sense that it mattered. And I want to see if you want to add to the idea of Longfellow defining early America.
Yes, Christoph made some excellent points. What I'd like to talk about is the writing, too, is what people realized was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow wrote for the common person, okay? He wrote for the family. And people reading his poetry could understand it. People could read it to their children. They could learn it very easily and learn how to recite it in school, like the lady said about learning Paul Revere's Ride. So you know, I think the whole context of his poetry was to really, he really wanted to make it understandable and make it so that people could share it with each other. You know, hence fireside poets like, you know, William Cullen Bryant, you know, Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., you know, writing for the common family, you know, being able to sit by the fireside and actually read the poetry together.
And if I may just add one little note to that, if you take a poem like The Day Is Done, which is almost like a programmatic poem for exactly what John has described so well, two stanzas from that are very easy to memorize. And this is another thing, you know, it's very easy to remember Longfellow lines. Come read to me some poem, some simple and heartfelt lay that shall soothe this restless feeling and banish the thoughts of day. And now the next stanza is important, not from the grand old masters, not from the hands sublime, whose distant footsteps echo through the corridors of time. So he's essentially saying, don't be afraid of literature. Don't think that literature is about sort of great minds, unapproachable, you know, revered kind of figures that you have to treat with sort of kid gloves. He's essentially saying literature is something that you can use. It's something to be read to people. Maybe sitting in front of the fireplace. And people did respond to that. One of the most kind of fascinating details about Longfellow's papers at Harvard is there's over 6,000 correspondents wrote to him, and people he didn't know. And they would always say, you don't know me, but I know you because I've read your poetry, and I feel entitled to write to you. I feel you're my friend. Which is absolutely unprecedented. And he took it seriously. He would respond. John Greenleaf Whittier, a fellow poet, he thought that this is what killed Longfellow, his correspondent, because always writing and responding. But he felt he had a duty as a poet, a civic duty to respond. Not like Whitman. When Whitman got fan letters, he would keep the postage and not write back when they included return postage. That was absolutely unacceptable to Longfellow.
We are talking about Henry Wadsworth Longfellow on Maine Calling. We're going to take another quick break for a pledge break, but we really hope you'll stay with us, donate to your public radio station, and then come back and join our conversation about Longfellow.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On February 7, 1935, artist Douglas Volk passed away in Freiburg. Volk and his wife Marion Larrabee co-founded the summer artist colony Hewn Oaks in Center Lovell. They, along with other artists drawn to Hewn Oaks, were influential in the arts and crafts movement of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The Volks hosted numerous artists there, inspiring the current use of the property as an artist residency. In 2005, the property was bequeathed to the University of Maine Foundation.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Roosevelt Campobello International Park. Happy birthday, Maine.
Local support comes from Androscoggin Home Health Care and Hospice, with expanded services in Augusta, including pediatric care and telehealth. More at androscoggin.org. By Maine Farmland Trust, growing a thriving future for farms, communities, and food systems. Dig in at MaineFarmlandTrust.org. And by Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at EvergreenYourHome.com.
This is listener-supported Maine Public Radio. This is Susan Tran. I'm the Director of Corporate Support here for Maine Public, and I'm here with a very familiar voice, Mr. Charles Beck.
Happy birthday, Maine.
It's true. Happy birthday, Maine. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call to show your support for public radio here in Maine. We are listening to this wonderful conversation about Henry Wadsworth Longfellow on today's Maine Calling, and I loved hearing how accessible he was, not just in terms of the words that he wrote being accessible to all different types of minds and readers, but the fact that he wrote back to people. He was so accessible, just like public radio is accessible today. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call to support your accessible public radio here in Maine.
1-800-866-1475 or mainpublic.org. Interactive media now for decades.
Yes.
Not just something of recent note that needs gizmo technology stuff.
We have that too.
Well, we have that, and our app does work.
That's
1-800-866-1475, mainpublic.org. Let's grow together. Friday, giving everyone a chance to call in and pledge their support for public radio. If you haven't yet, you know you're going to because you're a regular listener, you value this service, and you know the year ahead, we have an election coming up too that's going to mean some intense listening and wanting to be aware of everything that's going on. Please do your part right now. Whatever amount you feel it's worth, 1-800-866-1475.
1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. If you're enjoying this program, this Maine Calling about Longfellow, or perhaps you've been enjoying the Maine History Moments that we've been airing since the beginning of January to celebrate Maine's bicentennial, I suggest you check out mainepublic.org, where we have a bicentennial hub where you can see all sorts of different projects and series that we're working on in celebration of this great state of Maine. And while you're there, there's a red donate button.
There is.
You can click on that as well and join us. Join us as a member. Support public radio, educational radio here in Maine. Your support does make a difference regardless of the level. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call, or at mainepublic.org, where you can also check out the Bicentennial Hub.
1-800-866-1475, 1-800-866-1475. Of course, want to say thank you to everyone who has called in or
yes,
is already
thank
a supporter you. To this service. We often don't get to mention that quite as much as we'd like, especially as we're trying to find those new members. Hopefully you're one of them who's about to call, but thank you, thank you, thank you for doing your part. Now, we have to also say, if you are a supporter, you can increase your monthly gift. Many folks have been doing that this week, or you can make an additional gift. Valentine's is coming up. How about a gift membership? 1-800-866-1475.
You know, and another great reason to give right now is as an evergreen friend at the $15 a month level, or for a one-time gift of $180, we are pairing your Maine Public Radio membership with a one-year digital subscription to the New York Times. This gives you access, unlimited access to NewYorkTimes.com and all of the New York Times apps during that one-year period. It is a great return on investment to know that you are supporting the journalism, the news, the information, the education of Maine Public Radio, and also having access like this to the New York Times. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call to take advantage of that right now.
1-800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. I'd also like to recognize Jennifer Rooks, who hosts this program on a regular basis. Keith Chortle, who's involved with the program, also sits in from time to time. Cindy Hahn, one of our producers. Jonathan Smith, a producer as well, making this possible each and every day. Such a wonderful program to hear Maine voices comment on issues of importance to Maine and the nation in terms of reflecting how relevant those national issues are to our lives here in Maine, but especially bringing the community together to hear the Maine voices. I mean, today it's Longfellow, but we've had a topic very recently on impeachment, of course.
Yep.
Monday is the coronavirus. 1-800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. Certainly one of the favorite programs in the Maine Public Radio schedule, and it's all made possible, not just Maine Calling, all made possible by listener support.
That's right. This is Friday. It is the final moments of our February Grow Together campaign. Now is the best time to call. You make Maine Calling possible every single day. We are grateful for your support. 1-800-866-1475, and thank you.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the life and impact of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. My guests are Christoph Ermscher, professor of English at Indiana University in Bloomington, and John Babin with the Maine Historical Society and author of a book about Longfellow. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3567. 1-800-799-3866. John, let's talk very briefly about your favorite place in the world, the Wadsworth Longfellow home here in Portland. This was not where Longfellow was born, correct? But it was his childhood home and where he wrote some significant work.
Yes, it is. The home is a great place to visit. Of course, I'm going to plug that while I'm on the radio. We're open May through October. But the home is an amazing place, built in 1785, 1786 by his grandfather, Revolutionary War General and hero Peleg Wadsworth. The home was left to the Maine Historical Society by his sister, Anne Longfellow Pierce, who lived in the home 87 of the 90 years that she was alive. And when you go through the house, what you're going to see actually are original furnishings, original artwork, china clocks, knickknacks. Oldest piece dates back to 1760, and what the family referred to in letters as the new table dates back to 1835. So it's an absolutely amazing place, and Anne wanted to make sure that certain things were never touched or moved because she wanted you to see it the way that the poet remembered it, writing his first published poem in the home when he was only 13.
Oh, my goodness. And something I before we go back to calls, Christoph, I want to turn to you and ask you about Longfellow's role in the abolition movement. I understand his home in Cambridge, where he lived later on, was a stop on the Underground Railroad.
It was not a stop in the sense that he would actually harbor people in there, but it was certainly a stop in the sense that people came to him for money. As we now know, because we do have Longfellow's account books, and we do have a record of the money that he gave or the visitors that he received, how much he was actually in support of what was happening through the Underground Railroad. Longfellow has the distinction of being the first major white poet to have weighed in on slavery with a collection of poems on slavery, with a very small collection, just 7 new poems that he published after he returned from Europe in 1842. And this collection actually was, even though the poems seem mild to us by comparison today, it was almost like a bombshell, and was certainly something that was received, that was noticed, that was reprinted in abolitionist newspapers, was recognized by African American intellectuals as something that that was important. The poems were reprinted, so much so that when he died, you know, one of the African American newspapers actually weighed in and said he was a poet whose voice was always given on the side of liberty. That was the quotation. And one should also not forget his friendship with Charles Sumner, who one of the most radical minds of the time, was one of the closest friendships that he had with anybody. So all of that makes him somebody who was definitely on the side of abolitionist politics, even went further than that. But one also has to remember that he was always adamant that he was not somebody who made speeches or would join parties. He kept saying, I speak with my pen, not with my mouth. I'm not somebody who puts himself forward. But people knew where he stood and what he stood for.
Jay in Portland, go ahead with your question for our experts.
Well, hi. First of all, I'm a former announcer on Maine Public, and it's nice to be back in Maine again. I grew up in Minneapolis, and I most recently lived there on Minnehaha Avenue, a block from Hiawatha Avenue. And our largest park in Minneapolis is called Minnehaha Park. It's Minnehaha Creek. And I should know more about this, having grown up in Minnesota, but I'm just wondering if there are any other places in the United States that have paid such homage to Longfellow by naming neighborhoods after him, and also geographic areas such as Minnehaha and Hiawatha. You know, I'll listen.
Christoph, do you have any knowledge of places throughout the country named for either for Longfellow or for people in his poems?
Well, there's certainly, I mean, when you go to New Orleans, you will find state parks named. You will find a statue of Evangeline. It's also the case, that's kind of ironic, but you could buy, after Longfellow's death, you could acquire replicas of the Longfellow house. You could build them. You could even Sears Roebuck was selling them. And there were copies of Castle Craigie, as it was known. As far as I know, in Great Barrington in Lincoln, Massachusetts, Warrenton, Virginia. These are the places I remember. There's a house in Evanston, Illinois as well. So that's sort of a way of paying, I guess, homage to Longfellow indirectly through, you know, erecting kind of copies of his house. So that is testimony, I guess, to his national fame.
Kristen on Facebook writes, I'm making valentines to sell and including quotes and calligraphy from poets. I was making a special effort to use Longfellow since he's our best known Maine poet. How fun that this is what I'm listening to. So, Kristen, that's great. I think we have time for one more quick call. Natalie, if you could be quick, that would be great. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm a giant fan. I'll cut this down to just mentioning again the abolitionist poems and the passages of incredible heartbreak and power. Longfellow is insufficiently read, and people should take another look at the poems, even the ones they think they know, because underlying it all is this sense of sorrow, loss, heartbreak. There are harrowing passages in Hiawatha. There are lovely poems about death, just outright about death, nature, for example.
Natalie, I'm going to have to cut you off. Thank you so much for calling in. And I want to thank our guests here today, out a little bit early this Friday during our pledge drive, and also because of Poems From Here, which is coming up on Maine Calling. Thank you so much, Christoph Ermscher, Provost Professor of English at Indiana University in Bloomington, the author of three books on Longfellow, also John Babin, Visitor Services Manager at the Maine Historical Society and the Wadsworth Longfellow House, also the author of a book about Longfellow. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Sandra Harris answered your calls. Our theme song music composed by Mike Jandro. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.